My name's Matt, and I will be talking to Yenny Chung about leadership insights, team empathy, and continuous growth.
Last time when we met, we were discussing the change management. So I mean the rapid changes, significant layoffs, enterprise level rapid changes. So I know that you have been in a few organizations and you experienced the turbulent times, and especially like last year are turbulent. And I think many leaders in tech, they are trying to look for some examples or lessons learned from other leaders regarding the change management. So I'm just wondering if you have some thoughts about this topic that you could share with the listeners.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think I'm still on the learning phase, no? I think the challenge in it is regarding like the level at which you're at, no? I think it's definitely much harder to think about when you're at a level where you're managing other leaders, right? So if you're not directly doing the change management yourself, then the role becomes very much in how do you rally the leadership team that you're working with so that they can transmit the right messaging to their reports. And I think this is still something that I feel like I have a lot to learn still. I think like change management comes in a lot of facets then, you know, one area it could be on layoffs, like in reduction, but also in changing of the ways of working, for example, that also tends to be really turbulent. I think the best that, you know, at my level where I manage a leadership team, what I can do is to bring clarity to the leadership team. Like I provide them with documentation, diagrams. I do like a good job in like a town hall setting or an all-hands setting, so that I can set the vision fairly clear so that like in a sense when they start getting pushback from the team, they will have the material to rely on, no? But the way I think about change management as well, I think it is also to brace for the negativity and the pushback immediately afterwards. Like to be honest, no one really likes abrupt changes, but like in startup setting, in a fast moving industry, fast moving market, that's inevitable. And so like as a leader also to expect that roller coaster emotional curve, no? That you will you'll get hit with. So, you know, first people might appear surprised, or they might appear as, you know, there's denial or maybe anger that can also manifest, right? At one point it might switch to, you know, pointing fingers, blaming, stonewalling, typical like conflict mitigation strategy. And at one point of the curve, then they realize that, oh, okay, this is actually the change. Then they will move to like another mental state, no? So I think it is inevitable in some sense, and bracing ourselves for that emotion is also keeping our sanity, one way to keep our sanity.
Awesome, thank you for that. And regarding the culture and the changes, you have pretty international experience while working on the product or engineering side. So you work in San Francisco, you work for quite a while in Germany, so you are familiar with, let's say, European and US culture of building the product. And like those companies were pretty successful, or are still pretty successful, like Yelp or Rapid. They were funded by Andreessen Horowitz, like big companies. So there's probably a lot of a huge number of people from and leaders from who you learn. And like from my perspective, I'm always interested in work culture, like the time zone maybe problems and the cultural differences regarding managing people, like that you have experienced between those organizations working here in Germany and San Francisco, or between like, you know, headquarter in US and Germany.
Yeah, I see that as a very interesting challenge. Like definitely when I was working at Yelp, right? Like we are a office in the Hamburg side. So mostly we have a very international environment in Hamburg, but at the same time, it's also mainly from European regions, maybe Eastern Europe as well, from Russia, also some folks from China. But then in the US, then I also sense that there's a this main culture, right, is the US culture. So in terms of communication, there are actually a lot of anecdotes, right? For example, when we do all hands, right, the European members tend to be very interactive and they ask a lot of questions, sometimes also with a more challenging tone, no? I think in the US that was received less well, and they also like perceive our office as somewhat more challenging to manage, right? Because like an open question is more viewed as like an open challenge, no? But then on the European side, actually, like talking to folks, right? If you don't receive any questions in an all hands, that's when you worry, no? Because people aren't showing any interest. So I think depending the audience you're talking to, the reaction, there's also different interpretation. Also in the US, when you present, it's pretty common to use your own example, like your own career, like a lot of things about yourself, you know, when you talk to people, and then that doesn't end well with European audience, because like no one wants to hear about that. No, like, they want to talk about like facts more, like really from the first principle. So like when I do conference talks, for example, I will also adjust it to kind of cater to the audience on what they're looking for.
Nice. Thank you for the thoughts. In your case, you work as a VP of product, right? You have the engineering background, which is really helpful. But like you work on both of the roles, and you move more into the products. I'm just wondering, in your case, why you choose this way, or you like working on both, and how this is different for you?
That's a really good question. Definitely, like from my education and from my first opportunities, I was a software engineer, right? I also noticed that while I like problem solving, though, I'm less into the nitty gritty of the how of how to do things. Like my joy has always come from, okay, we managed to finish something as a team. And then even when I was an engineer, I focused a lot on, okay, how do we make my team more efficient? How can we make sure we distribute work in a way that we don't step on one another's toes? So it was pretty obvious to me that like my passion lied more on the management side of things. And at one point, like throughout my career, I was also working at startups, no? During this market where there was huge expansions, but at the same time, like now things are really slowing down, right? Then it's also apparent that when you get a lot of VC funding, for example, you need to use it very wisely and your product needs to make money at some point, no? And so a lot of the thoughts that I was putting into the company actually ended up being in the product side or in the like the product operation side on how we can come up with these features that can solve our customers' needs and to be more targeted on that front, no? So gradually, I think it was actually a very organic movement. And especially during this climate, then I also realized that, you know, no matter how hard you try on the engineering side, if you don't build the right things, then everything is still in vain, no? And that's how I kind of organically drifted to the product side of things.
So I could assume that the metrics could be really important on your kind of level, like either the engineering or product level. And there is a lot of talks about the DORA metrics, space metrics. A lot of technical leaders are using it. You know, what to use, what works for you? How do you approach those?
Can I give an unpopular opinion? I actually think that you need metrics. No? Oh, I am allowed to. Okay, that's great. let's hope my former bosses or my current bosses may not be listening. So I'm of the contrarian opinion that metrics is an indication of problems and you want to use it to debug. But eventually, if you have a small enough organization, if you're not growing very rapidly, you might not need to rely on that much about metrics. Like, honestly, a lot of the information organically flows to you if you're doing good one-on-ones. Like, engineers are very open about their problems, as you might imagine, about where it is blocking their workflow. And like when your organization is not like scaling up rapidly, or if you're not dealing with like trust issues between departments, then I think that time is better used to really understand these bottlenecks through qualitative feedback. And then if you want to report up, you can also do something more qualitative. Now you can write, like draw some diagrams on where it is the engineers are wasting time or like problems with developer productivity rather than looking at metrics, because metrics is the first step, right? In the end, you still need to come up with a plan. So if you have a strong enough confidence that this is the root cause, then it's more useful to deal with those instead.
Awesome, thank you.
Also, like as you know, right, engineering metrics, sometimes it can also be quite arbitrary. I mean, what are you going to count then? Lines of code, like number of commits, number of PRs, right? So, I mean, yeah, DORA is one way, definitely, but then we should also be quite critical about what exactly are we tracking.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. You need to be pragmatic. From my perspective, I really like to have some kind of metrics to have something to tackle, to see some kind of progress. I remember when we were organization without any OKRs and there were some metrics, but I think those metrics could show highlight the priority that you have in a given quarter, right? For engineering teams and so on. So you don't have to be so about the metrics. You don't have to be so picky that you say you need this exact number, but
yeah,
kind
exactly.
of like the guidance, right? If you know what I mean.
Definitely. That personally, I prefer having a really good story. So if you can articulate the strategy very well, right? Then sure, metrics can help tell the story, right? But if you can give the direction in a way where people understand what you're getting at and how everything kind of is put together, right? I think the interesting thing is about technical strategy, right? Because I think in this area, it's less about just the metrics say, okay, we should focus on observability, for example, in this quarter. I think much more important is it's congruent steps now that you do together. For example, if you want to increase observability, that might be because your organization is scaling up rapidly. It's harder to ramp up new people towards system. That's why you want easy to access dashboards, for example, so that everybody can debug, everybody can go on call. If you're in a smaller organization, then you might want to focus more on knowledge sharing itself for people to understand the software in depth. Maybe the dashboards and, making very, very clear, fancy dashboards is less of a priority there. It always needs to come together as a story. I think that is more important.
That's a valid point. I really like this this comparison to a story that it's kind of like the story, the context. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And let's discuss more those pain points of the leaders. You were on both sides on the VP of engineering side or director kind of level, and now the product.
Yeah.
I mean, the metrics and leading people might be a huge pain point at work. And I'm just wondering, from your perspective and your career, for you, what are the biggest pain points or where biggest pain points in those VP or director level on a product or engineering side? Maybe something that people don't see from the outside, right? Something that is not obvious, right? You check the job requirements and there everything is perfect. When you check the company website, everything is perfect. But when you go and sign, you probably meet some problems that are not so obvious during the interview talks, right? And I'm just wondering, have you met some of those problems and how you dealt with them?
Yeah, of course there are a lot of problems. Otherwise, these roles don't exist, no? I think probably the hardest thing about the role is how lonely you would be in that role, no? Because you have a manager, but your manager is the CEO or maybe equivalent, no? So they're a stakeholder that you need to manage. They're not necessarily a manager in the sense that, say, if you're a line manager, you have a director as your boss, right? They are there to guide you. They are there to support you. But then if you're, if you report to, the CEO, then definitely they're a stakeholder. And everything that you say, you need to really be careful, no? Because otherwise, maybe if you say that, oh, actually, I have too many people in the team, then down the lane, they'll be like, oh, you said there are too many people in the team. Why don't we just reduce your budget? Right. So you need to be very careful. And at the same time, you're kind of in the middle, right? Because your direct team, like the team of management, sees you as the leadership figure. But what they don't see is that you also have a boss to manage, right? Or other departments to manage. So it's not like, sometimes you also don't have a lot of wiggle room in terms of how you would make decisions. So I think that hard part is like, how can you foster your immediate team, like the management team, to also see you as part of their team instead of like the boss, you know? Because in the end, your role is still to facilitate that we can make decisions that is, you know, good enough on all sides, no? Like that the CEO can approve of, other department leads can approve of, and the leadership team is confident enough to execute on, no? So I think that is probably something that is not explicit in the in the job description, right? That, okay, well, while the role sounds really fancy, but you are actually middle management too.
And you mentioned the line management roles, and
yeah.
I recall that last time we talked about some interesting topic around like differences between senior management and line management role, and differences between them, and like you were emphasizing the empathy thing. Mm-hmm. So maybe you could elaborate more on that, because this was really interesting.
Yeah. I think that also feeds into the difficulty for like a VP of a director role. As a line manager, and that is also like times I think of very fondly. Like you get a lot of touch points with a team, and the closer you get with the people, then obviously the suggestions that you have on how to solve their problems become better, right? Because you're very much on the ground. But then for a director and for a VP, the system is that you wouldn't have the time or capacity to meet with every single person with the same kind of frequency, right? That also doesn't facilitate, you know, like your time management, that just doesn't work out. But at the same time, that would mean that your decision-making is more flawed because you don't know exactly what is going on. So I think, and at the same time, it's the rapport as well, because as EM, you have a lot of opportunity to get huge support and like very strong support from the team. But as a director, they always view you as leadership or management. They don't put names. Like, it's very funny, yeah? Like, people always say, oh, it's management that decided, or it's leadership that decided, but you know that's you. And so, because you're far away, and also finding these touch points with a team and striking a balance on how do you keep yourself accessible to the rest of the team, and that they trust you, they can tell you feedback, is very important. Otherwise, it's like a flawed feedback loop, right? If less people tell you things like, you know, give you feedback that you're doing, is that you're on the wrong track, right? The more wrong things you do, the less you hear, and it really spins out of control. So I try to also set up these, you know, I do set up some skip levels from time to time, and I also have like an office hour every week so that the team can drop in to talk about their concerns. But of course, it takes a lot of nudging. Engineers are also by nature not as like outgoing, I would say. So you really have to try and promote and, you know, get to them to really hear like how they're thinking. And I think that is a key secret sauce to doing well in this role.
But those office hours, like, tell me more about it. How do you approach it? Because, like, let me tell you my experience. You already mentioned it. It's really difficult, especially if somebody's introvert. Like, engineers are really often introvert. Yeah, it's really difficult to kind of like get in those conversations, and like during the office hours, not many people were interested, like when I was doing it, right, as a leader.
Oh, I see.
A bit of, I'm really open. The people still kind of feel that if you are really high, they're really cautious about what they're saying. And especially if you are doing it, for instance, remotely, it's really difficult. And I'm just wondering, how does it work for you? Like, do you have like many people coming? It's like always online. And like, how do you approach it? How does it work for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I don't also have like a magic answer for that. And I'm also trying hard, right? I think it's just to be persistent. Like, one thing I learned is that, okay, well, if this time no one comes, right? I talk to all the managers, hey, encourage your reports to come. I post on the public channel. Every time I do a town hall, I'll be like, okay, if you have questions about X and Y, do come and talk about it, because that's an area I'm super interested in. And then gradually people get the idea, especially if you can, you know, especially when you say you're looking for feedback on specific areas, then people tend to come more. Another area is also, I think we need to like show a bit of a vulnerability as well, like to show the human side, no? Otherwise, it's, as you say, the title makes it very scary and they think that you're very high up in your management and your leadership, no? So you need to show also like the human face, no? And I do that, I go to the office fairly often, so like every 2 weeks. So I actually live in a different city, right? But I go to Berlin every 2 weeks or so to like just grab lunch with people and, you know, be accessible. And I think little things go a long way. But then when people show up, then we never shy away from topics, right? Because whenever I ask them about, okay, what are we doing well at the moment? And how, what are some things we can improve on? Engineers always have things they want to improve on. That's the nature of engineering, right? We all learn to optimize. We all learn to, okay, how do you be more efficient? That's why if you ask people these questions, you know, like it just flows.
Awesome. Thank you for that. For me, really inspiring what you said is to get some kind of topic around which we could like start the discussion maybe. So this could be like lessons learned for me, so to say, for today.
We're all learning.
I'm wondering about your opinion about the remote hybrid on-site thing. So recently we see like from the last year, the pushback from the companies, even Zoom is saying like, hey, get back to the office. So especially for this company, it's really weird to hear, to be honest.
So ironic, but, isn't it? Yeah.
Ironic, yeah. But I'm wondering, what is your opinion about this kind of work setup? What works for you? How do you see it in the future? How it should work?
I actually think that how do I put it? I think probably easiest is if you have all in office or all remote, because in this case, it's just easier to set up. No? For example, you wouldn't have a situation where half the people are in the room, half the people are outside. But I think with the times, right, we cannot expect that everyone is in the office. During the COVID times, we also hired differently. So I think in each company, there are remote folks. No? So we need to figure out how to do the hybrid situation well or remote. So for hybrid, like there are different things. Like how do you even do the video, for example? Can you have everyone switch on their video even if they're in the room? Makes it more inclusive to the people who are calling in. But a lot of the things that promote hybrid or remote working is actually just good in general. For example, have clear agenda, have clear documentation, like embrace a more async working lifestyle instead of always being in meeting. That is helpful. The more remote a company goes though, the more we need to emphasize on the social aspect. As we talked about, you know, like if you don't meet the team for a while, then you become leadership and management again, right? So you need to have this type of social connection often. And I think the more higher up you go, the more you need to show your face in some cases. If not in person, you need to find a way that is relatable for people, for you, no? And I think it's also important for the company to have these social events so that we can get together maybe every 2-3 months or so. We have like team gatherings where we fly people in. Well, that is not environmentally friendly. Maybe we get the train in, or, you know, like have people come to one place to celebrate or to connect together, no? So like, I think that would be the strategy then if you go the hybrid or remote angle, no?
And lastly, the last question that I wanted to ask you personally, and I think a lot of leaders are always looking for resources to help them grow, to help them learn something new. And I'm just wondering, in your case, are there any books or maybe conferences or other resources that you would recommend to other like fellow tech leaders that have been particularly helpful to you in your journey as
Definitely.
A leader?
Yeah, so for conference, I would recommend the Lead Dev series now. They have locations in the US, in Germany, in the UK. When I transitioned from an individual contributor to management, and I rely a lot on their resources, they don't just do conferences. There are also articles at which they post. I myself also wrote there for a period of time. So that's helpful for me to also get a pulse of what people are talk about, right? And for example, managing now is also different from managing during a time where there's rapid growth, right? So like the content that you get is also different. In terms of book, there are so many good management books, right? For management in particular, I recommend Making a Manager by Julie Draw. She's a design leader at Facebook. I think she nailed the definition of what a manager means to her, right? So your short-term goal would be to maximize the outcome, you know, of this team. But then long-term, it is to make sure that your team has the capacity to take on new challenges, to be flexible for long-term challenges. So you're, as a manager, you need to balance both roles, right? So if you just think about the short-term, you just squeeze people's productivity, you make them unhappy, but it delivers. But then long-term, then you wouldn't have a team anymore, everybody quits, and then no one is growing in their role. So I think in the end, it's always a balance. But if you always just think about growth, right, like then there's no outcome short in the short run, then that also doesn't work. And then the next book I would recommend is called Talent is Overrated. I think that changes the way I think about managing people. So what it is about is that they don't believe in, okay, talent is just coming from out of nowhere, as it's just born, it's the genes, right? They more talk about, like, it's all about opportunity, how you spend your time and deliberate practice. So if you're not good at something, then consider how much time actually have you spent on honing that skill, and in what way as well? Like, are you getting rapid feedback to help you get better? So I think in that case, it also helps me actually reflect how I get good in certain skills versus not. And I think it's just much more a positive and growth mindset, the right mentality. No? So I would recommend engineering managers or any leader, people leaders to read that book.
Awesome. Thank you, Jenny, for that. I really like the second thing about the talent. Because like I was always like playing instruments, and like I always heard that you need to have a talent to play an instrument or a guitar. But the thing is the same as at work. It's a matter of time you spend. It's a matter of practice. It's a matter of listening to the feedback from other people and applying it. So I think it makes a lot of sense, and everybody could apply it, and everybody could learn anything. I would say, of course, you have some level that it's really hard to reach, but I mean, in most of the cases, you can be, you know, you can learn to program, you can learn wherever you want, to be honest. So,
yeah, I just think that it's a much more positive mindset than thinking that you're born with these limitations, right?
Yeah.
Instead of thinking about limitations, let's think about very much in a growth mindset, like where I can get better, how we can practice better, how we can hold into our skills better.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Jenny, for the short and insightful talk. I really appreciate your time and your insights here.
Oh, thank you as well. Thanks for having me, Matt.
Better tech leadership powered by BrainHub. Follow Les Schick on LinkedIn and subscribe to the Better Tech Leadership newsletter.